Well, there are now just 4 days to go before polling day, when you will decide who you want to be in power here for the next 5 years. Morning Ireland has been on the road for the past 3 weeks talking to voters about what issues will influence their choice. Everything from housing to cost of living to immigration to health, it's all being discussed. Our reporter Cian McCormack will join us tomorrow from Letterkenny in County Donegal to hear what is on the minds of voters there. Well, we're also interviewing the party leaders on their manifestos, and this morning it's the turn of the Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin, who is seeking re-election in Cork South Central. You're very welcome. Good morning.
Thank you very much indeed.
Now, the issue of carers has been thrust right into the centre stage following Simon Harris's exchange in Kanturk with Charlotte Fallon on Friday evening. It's also been the subject of many Liveline programmes on RT Radio recently, hearing from people who are caring for their loved ones at home. You've been in government now, most recently, for 4.5 years. Why haven't you abolished the means testing for the carers allowance?
I think that's a fair question. We have increased the income disregard, and I suppose where we were starting out from in the base in 2020, we have substantially increased broadly in investment and so on in disability. But fundamentally, I take the point, we do need to, we're committing to removing that means test over the next 4 years. Within obviously our budgetary framework, but we've provided about 600 million to do that. That's what it would take in 1 year to do. And every year you have a whole range of needs and concerns that you have to address, both in the disability sector, the caring sector, healthcare, right across the board.
So how long before carers who are currently being means tested won't be? Will it be 2030?
No, I would like it to be before that. And I think there's broad consensus across the political divide now that it should be one of the key priorities of the next government. It will be a key priority for us to remove the means test. And increasingly, as we're ageing as a population, people caring at home for loved ones and so forth, or for others, will be an increasing part of our caring structure. And we do need to do better than we have been doing across that entire area.
And will the allowance be still subject to tax?
Hopefully, I mean, that's an issue that we'd have to work out in terms of people's various incomes and so on like that. But
there's nothing in your manifesto to say that it wouldn't be.
Yeah, but I don't think it should be. I think it should be separated out, given the specific reason why people and get the carers around. So, by the way, the criteria are quite restrictive in terms of qualifying for the carers allowance. So that deals with a lot of that. And many of them are not in the position to be paying tax.
But many are paying tax. Yeah, I mean, we've heard them on the radio in the last few weeks. So if you're in government, you will say you will have a line, a policy not to tax.
We'll work towards keeping this out as a separate payment, in because it's specific to caring and to looking after people, which in many ways is far more cost effective and better for the person being cared than people having to go into institutions and so forth.
On Friday night, Charlotte Fallon, she really drew the country's attention to the pay that Section 39 care workers like her get. Despite the pay agreement over a year ago, some still haven't received a pay rise. And then that gap between them and the HSE staff who do the same work is growing because of a pay rise for the HSE staff.
Yep.
Why can't you just make the decision to give these organisations the funds they need to achieve pay equity?
Well, I think fundamentally what needs to happen is that when the National Public Service pay agreement is being negotiated, they should be covered within the National Pay Agreement. That hasn't been the case over the last decade or two, and that has to change. Now, we did make progress over the last number of years insofar as we followed up quickly, well, relatively quickly, in terms of a separate deal for those in Section 39 organisations, as they are called. Mm-hmm. But what's very frustrating is a deal was hammered out a year ago in the 8%, which you heard about earlier in the programme. But that wasn't, you know, in many cases, some organisations are still arguing with the Department of Public Expenditure, whoever, to fine-tune. Mm-hmm. And that's not... That's very frustrating from our point of view, because the principle was agreed. But I think the way to deal with it, with the social partners as well, mm-hmm. is to say that within any public service pay agreement, the Section 39 organisation should be cared for. Now, we did make progress on hospices, for example. This exact same position applied to hospices. And it took about 2.5 years for the government to get an agreement and to get follow through, because it relates to pensions, security of tenure. And it's a big issue. I mean, there are 1,100 Section 39 49 organisations mm-hmm. out there. So this is not simple.
Will they
either
come under that umbrella then if you're back in government?
I don't want it to pretend it's an easy issue. There's some very small organisations. There are some very large organisations. And I think they have to come under the umbrella of the public service pay agreements. But also we need to fundamentally re-examine the relationship with these organisations and the state, because increasingly that model, I think, is becoming frayed. And there are many challenges. And many of the organisations have said this to me in terms of financial sustainability. These are organisations that grew up in previous eras, mm-hmm. looking after when the state was not as involved as it is today. And it's a choice about the kind of society we want. And so I think we have to both bring it within the national pay agreement, but secondly also fundamentally re-examine the relationship between the organisations and the state vis-a-vis the services, because
okay.
they are organisations are providing services on behalf of society and on behalf of the state.
She also spoke of the suffering of the disability community, and we know that today over 1,200 people under the age of 65 are forced to live in nursing homes because they cannot get a home of their own. There's nearly 2,000 parents over the age of 70 caring for their intellectually disabled sons and daughters at home. Nearly 500 of those parents are over the age of 80. Why isn't there anything in your manifesto which will change this situation anytime soon? Because you talk of multi-year capital plans for investment, but that's not going to change the situation for those families.
Well, I think
now
the multi-year capital plans would, in terms of residential and in terms of respite, which we do need additional capacity, physical capacity, but as well as you know, people to make sure that many of the parents over 80, for example, are very concerned about what happens if they pass on. Mm-hmm. And we've all met with parents in that situation. And therefore, we do have to update capacity. I also believe that the HSE has to develop much stronger databases in respect of people with additional needs and with disabilities, both physical and sensory and intellectual disability databases. They were stronger before and they need to be, because that guides you to making sure you have proper provision for those parents and for those. And also, remember, there's been challenges over the years in decongregating institutional settings. So the whole tendency over the last 30 years was to move away from institutional settings.
But are they just excuses? I mean,
they're realities.
You've been in government now for 4.5 years. Can you really say that all of what we're talking about this morning has been a priority for the government?
I think, yes. I mean, but and I've made it clear last week, before any of this happened, I launched a policy document on disability, and I said it would be a red line for me going into government, particularly in relation to schools and a national therapy services in situ in our special schools, where we would have therapists employed by the Department of Education in our special schools. A lot of resistance to that over the last 2 years, and I'm making it very clear I will not
resistance
go into government.
From where?
From within the system itself, because there was alternative policies had been created back in 2013, 2014 called Progressing Disability. I understand the concerns, by the way. I'm not a dictator, but I'm of the view that we need multidisciplinary therapy teams in our schools. I've been of that view for a long time. I fought against that policy at the time. I wasn't successful. I was in opposition. It's embedded, but the problem is parents and children in particular are not getting access to therapies.
But for the adults who are disabled, where is their independence? Where is their dignity? But where has it been after 4.5 years of
But I think we have increased, look, I don't want to go through the list of everything we've done, and there's a long list. I mean, in terms of increasing funding for independent living, we're saying in our manifesto we have to increase funding for independent living. Also work. Like, society needs to change too in terms of facilitating people with disabilities into the workplace, where there can be a lot of obstacles and a lot of resistance. And we have various subsidy schemes and so forth, but it needs a bit more proactivity than just providing subsidies in terms of wages and so on.
Autistic children, the state continuing to breach the law, the constitution, by not providing a school place for around 160 children now, over 12,000 still waiting on an assessment of need, and thousands are waiting years. We spoke to one mother in August whose son, 5 years of age, was waiting 7 years, on a 7-year waiting list rather, for services, for therapies. Now, your manifesto talks about recruiting additional therapists. How many and how soon?
Well, we're talking about, there's two dimensions to this. There's therapists within the health service, within the community development network teams, and the initiative that I want to develop, which is therapies within special schools beginning and then DESH Plus schools, where you would have multidisciplinary teams in the schools, right throughout the school year and working. And that would be, I think, transformative for children. In terms of, again, the recruitment and retention is an issue within the service, within the HSE.
There's 800 vacancies at the moment.
Exactly.
In the
so there's a real problem from a human resource management point of view and structural point of view within that existing system that I spoke about earlier. Mm-hmm. That's problematic.
And so how are you going to recruit at least 800?
There's no issue. The funding is there. I think the HSE has a responsibility in terms of how it makes sure it creates an environment that attracts people in, but also retains people and makes it a sustainable quality job for people.
Your minister, Stephen Donnelly, has been the minister, the last four and a half years.
The feedback we're getting back is that the many feel very overburdened very early on whilst in these services. And one of the issues we did in the last government was we wanted to take disability from health and move it off to the Department of Children, which we did, and again was a complex move and took quite a considerable length of time to do that, regrettably, I would say. And I think there are opportunities now that it's in within that department to have a more singular or more uniform approach to developing disability policies and also implementation in the time ahead.
But is that not all just words? If you're talking directly to that mother in Blanchardstown whose son is on a 7-year waiting list, what hope can you give her that within the next year, you will get the therapies that
I think in the interim, we have to provide, we have to fund the access to private therapy capacity in the interim. No one should be waiting 7 years.
That's happening at the moment.
No, that woman should not be waiting 7 years. It is, and that's why I've articulated, within government, we want the different approaches. But I think there has to be an interim solution for people in that situation. I mean, in education, we've been far faster in getting far greater additionality, 16 extra new special schools delivered now. Prior to the last government, that wasn't happening at the same rapidity. We've up to 40,000 professionals involved in special education nowadays, today. But again, any child that's not certain about a place next September, that's not good enough. And that's why we want the central application system whereby parents can go through that. Parents have to go through too much at the moment to get their child into a school.
They have to go to court,
I've been involved in this.
When
I was
the
Minister
for
Education, I made it a right. I didn't want people to have to go to court. And I created pupil-teacher ratios for children with special needs. Mm-hmm. No child, irrespective of whether the child has additional needs or not, should have to be waiting until the 11th hour to get a place in school. And that, to me, is a bottom line. It's a constitutional right, and the state has an obligation to fulfil and deliver
that. And it's breaching it currently.
In respect of a number of kids. Although I'm told that all the children in that Dublin, I think it's 15 or 14 area, are now assured of a place next September.
In mainstream schools, there are significant staff shortages in primary and secondary schools too. Nearly 1,500 vacancies between both. Nearly 800 people who are teaching our youngest children are not registered with the Teaching Council, according to the INTO, and others are being taught by special needs assistants. Why is there nothing in your manifesto to encourage home all those teachers who had to emigrate because this country is too expensive for them to live in?
Well, in the first place, I think it needs to be said that there are 9,000 extra teachers now working in our system, which never gets said. So, and that is a very significant increase.
That doesn't really matter when you have 1,500 vacancies and subjects are having to be dropped by secondary schools.
I think it does matter to say that 9,000 additional teachers have been recruited, because one would get the impression that none have been recruited. Population is growing. We have reduced the pupil-teacher ratio. We're the only party in their manifesto saying we're going to reduce the pupil-teacher ratio at primary level even more from 23 to 1
to 19
to 1.
But recruitment of teachers, what are you doing to bring them back?
But you
how
see,
are you incentivising them
to come back? You don't want perverse incentives. And I think there needs to be far more detailed examination of that than what some
what
parties...
What would be a perverse incentive?
If you're incentivising, like somebody goes out and they're back within, because you're providing an incentive to bring someone back within 6 months, or, there are various reasons. You need to analyse it in more detail is what I'm saying. And we need to think this through. I think what's critical is...
But we need teachers.
Of course we need teachers. And we need to... we need to increase training places and so forth for teachers, which we have expanded, and you have, we've excellent teacher training colleges. I think we've also responded in terms of bursaries for masters and so on. And there are clear initiatives we can take in terms of for post primary education. I think security of tenure for teachers in the first instance is important. I also think re-examining the masters in terms of training for second level teachers. It could be accelerated. It went to a 2-year program and so on, and the cost is significant.
1,500 vacancies, both in primary and secondary, and the fact that our children, the future generations, are being taught potentially by people who are not qualified to teach them.
Well, sorry, every year, I mean, first of all, we're in the totality of what's been taught. I mean, you're talking about very small numbers here in terms of the number of children. And that's not something we do not want any time that teachers... But that has happened all of the time. I mean, going way back for temporary appointments or for whatever, people being sick, someone will be brought in and so forth. But fundamentally, the objective is always to create enough teaching training places so that we have a sufficiency...
And that is the job of government, yeah, to hire teachers.
Yeah, but we hired 9,000 extra last year. 9,000 extra teachers were hired, not last year, in the last number of years. That is a significant increase. And every year... people and unions would say to us, we want the pupil-teacher ratio down. We're committing to bringing down the pupil-teacher ratio. You could say, let's not bring it down. And that would create your sufficiency of teachers. It is stretched. It is challenged, particularly at post-primary level. It's not as simple either, because different areas of the country have different needs. That's why, for example, we have a particular initiative in our manifesto for small rural primary schools, about 1,500 of them, where we would give them additional resources. Okay. It's why we have a DESH Plus model for the most severely disadvantaged schools, that we would give them additional resources. This is constantly moving, and I won't be happy until we have a sufficiency of teachers available to fill posts. And we do want to bring teachers back, and we do want to facilitate, and we will look at measures to bring teachers back.
Okay.
And housing is a key issue.
It really is. And I want to talk to you about the economy, the wider economy, and if the corporation tax, because this is a really big issue now, and it's coming to the fore with Donald Trump about to take office in January. If those corporate tax receipts collapse in the next 5 years, and by collapse I mean have even by, you know, from go back to 2020 levels, will it be the people who we've been talking about this morning who will feel the brunt of any cuts which might have to be imposed in the same way that they did from 2008?
No. As Fianna Fáil's concerned, it's investment in public services is the priority. And we've made that clear in our manifesto, and I would invite people to contrast our manifesto with those of the other parties, and you will see a stronger, specific provision for investment in public services.
So what will you drop? Projections, what would have to be cut?
But could I just make the point? Yeah. First of all our projections are based on Department of Finance economic projections for the next 5 years, which take on board, by the way, all of the international scenarios and also the methodologies used by the Department of Finance. So that's the first point. Obviously, I have said consistently that if external shocks come our way, and remember, I've led the government, this previous government, through very significant external shocks, not least COVID-19, Brexit and the aftermath of Brexit.
But you were
also
in power when the economy crashed the last time.
Yeah, but I've proven that I can lead through very difficult times, and I will be in a position to do so over the next number of years. But if a shock comes our way, I've said we have to adapt. And all parties should agree that we have to adapt.
But what in your manifesto are you prepared to drop?
Well, what I'm saying to you...
What will be cut?
I think I've given you... Investment in public services is the overarching priority for us, because our population is growing, and we and parallel with that.
So is it the tax cuts that you're proposing? Might they have to take a back seat?
Everyone's now creating a scenario that you're going to have a recession next year. I mean, there's no one predicting that right now. And I think it's very legitimate for political parties, based on the economic projections that we currently have, to base our manifestos on that. I've never... ever before seen manifestos based on the scenario that there's going to be an immediate recession after the election, so therefore we need to prepare a manifesto for that. That's not the scenario we're facing
right
now.
But you have to be prepared.
But we have to be prepared. And that's why we put 50 billion, or we're providing for 50 billion in the Future Ireland Fund. It was Fianna Fáil that created the Future Ireland Fund and the Infrastructure, Climate and Nature Fund. Now, Sinn Féin want to get rid of that, for example, and I think that's wrong. And I think that would be also a priority, because that's looking after people for the next 30 years.
But you'll have seen the analysis by the Business Post that if those windfall receipts are taken out of your manifesto, there'll be a 55 billion euro black hole.
I think, again, that was... Well, I don't think... I mean, I don't fully accept what they're saying. They're basically saying as if they're creating a new scenario, that's where we are. We're not... That's not where we are right now. If we were to have a situation where there's a reduction in corporate taxes, governments will have to adapt. Any government would have to adapt, and every political party should acknowledge that. But by providing, we've also provided 20 billion for existing levels of service. So we've put a lot of reserves and buffers in to try and be at least ready for any cyclical downturn. And there could be. And there could
be
an external shock.
But you're not widening the tax base.
Sorry?
You're not widening the tax base.
Well, when you say we're not widening, I mean, at this stage, people want to break. Workers want to break in terms of tax. They feel they're paying too high taxes.
But is that not populism? No, I mean, you're a politician. You're meant to be planning for future.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, but we're more moderate.
For future years, future generations.
Yeah, yes,
you have to.
And we are. But
you have to think of ways to widen the tax base.
And we've put 50 billion. We're putting 50 billion aside. We 0.8%. We put it in law. Fianna Fáil in law with our colleagues in government put it in law that 0.8% is being provided, which will give us about 50 billion over the next 5 years. Sinn Féin are saying no to that. So we're being far more responsible than others in respect of that.
Okay.
And I would like that to continue even if things got worse, because we do have to provide for the future needs of younger generations in terms of healthcare and pensions.
Just
and
one
so
final
forth.
Question. Can a stable government be formed with more than three parties? In your view?
I think it will be very challenging. I mean, as I said, I've led with three parties, with the Green Party, Fine Gael and ourselves, and that was complex, challenging, but we did it. I've always said, by the way, from the outset of the campaign, that my sense was it would be a three-party coalition government of some form after this general election. It's
if it was more than that, though, if Labour and the Sock Dems and the Greens.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to get into any specific. Our basic principles are: we want a pro-enterprise government that is positively pro-European Union, that's democratic. We want to engage with parties that are democratic and transparent. And also that are committed to home ownership and in particular to the priorities and that we have set, and one of those is in the disability areas.
Okay, thank you very much for coming in to talk to us this morning. Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin seeking re-election in Cork South Central, and there is a full list of candidates who are doing that for Cork South Central on the RTE News website.